Radio.
Africa. Uh-huh. Well, it was licks like fire from the white slave master every day. Got down on my knees, weeks and weeks before we crossed the seas to reach in the West Indies. Then they make me work.
Yes, I work.
I said I work.
Yes, I work.
Good Lord, no pay. I toil, I toil, I toil. I say I toil so hard each day. I'm dying. I'm crying. Oh, 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 Lord, I wanna be free. Slave master standing there with a gun. Oh, I know he gonna shoot to kill. So I stay and I pray, but I'm planning still. I study night and day how to break away. I got to make a brilliant escape. But every time I think about the whip and them dogs, my body that start to shake. He made me work.
Yes,
I said I work.
Yes, I work.
Oh, oh, Lord, no pay. I toil, I toil, I toil, I toil, I toil hard each day. I'm dying. I'm crying. The boss would have listened to me someday. Although he knew my request was small, 'twas the sting of the whip there to answer me when I called. We had to chant and sing to express our feeling to that wicked and cruel man. That was the only medicine to make him listen. And his so-calypso began. He made me work.
Yes, I work.
I said I work.
Yes, I work.
Oh, oh, Lord, no pay. I toil, I toil, I toil, I toil, I say I toil hard each day. I'm dying. I'm crying. I have no place to sleep. I
I cannot conceal. Forgot my native culture, live like a vulture. From the white man I had to steal, because he made me work. I said I work. Oh, oh Lord, no pay. I toil. I say I toil so hard each day. I'm dying. I'm
Upon arrival, Christopher Columbus made contact with the indigenous peoples, whom he called Indians. Generally, they were said to have been divided into two groups, the Caribs, a fierce and cannibalistic people, and the peaceful farming Arawaks. The first people met by the Europeans referred to themselves by completely different names, such as Boricua and Quisqueya, and belonged to the Taino people who lived and still do in Puerto Rico and Hispaniola. The ones referred to as Arawaks call themselves Locono, and modern-day descendants of the Caribs call themselves Kalina or Kalinago. Many in society have opined that Columbus could not have discovered a land that already existed.
Columbus was a mighty sailor. He sailed the open seas. He went down in the Caribbean, and he called it the West Indies. He said he found a new world, and he expect me to believe. But how could this world be new when it's much older than Adam and Eve? Columbus lie, Columbus lie, Columbus lie, Columbus lie, lie, lie. He said he discovered the whole of America. He never tell nobody how we have to run from Apache. Columbus lie, Columbus lie, Columbus lie so bad. I believe Columbus was mad. The man with the Santa Maria was as brave as a man can be. He sailed on to Venezuela for another discovery. He said he discovered new lands, and he thought that I wouldn't know. He discovered a lot of Indians who discovered the lands before. Columbus lie, Columbus lie, Columbus lie, Columbus lie, lie, lie. He took all the glory for many discoveries. The truth of the story, those lands were discovered already. Columbus lie, Columbus lie. And if you concentrate, you'll discover the man was late. Strange land, they call you an alien. You got to explain to immigration what is your intention. Columbus didn't have to do that. He just didn't make no sense. His authority was a cock hat, and his passport was violence. Columbus lie, Columbus lie, Columbus lie, Columbus lie, lie, lie. He fooled everybody.
Following Haiti, the Dominican Republic in 1844, and Cuba in 1898, were the next to gain their independence. Jamaica and Trinidad and Tobago were the first British colonies to gain independence in 1962, followed by Guyana and Barbados in 1966, the Bahamas in 1973, Grenada in 74, Dominica in 1978, St. Lucia and St. Vincent and the Grenadines in 79, Antigua a year later in 1980, Belize in 1981, and St. Kitts and Nevis in 1983. In late 1987, Montserrat, the British Virgin Islands, the Cayman Islands, and the Turks and Caicos Islands remained crown colonies with limited internal self-government. Anguilla, having broken away unilaterally from St. Kitts and Nevis in 1967, became an associated state of Great Britain in 1976. Aruba, Bonaire, Curaçao, St. Martin, St. Eustatius, and Saba are still dependents of the Netherlands, as are Guadeloupe and Martinique of France, and Montserrat and the British Virgin Islands of Britain. In 1947, a regional conference was held in Jamaica where West Indians talked about political independence. As a part of its decision to push modified self-government, the British authorities encouraged the experiment in confederation. The idea had been discussed in the Colonial Office since the late 19th century, but it was brought to new life with a regional conference held at Montego Bay, Jamaica in 1947. The British were interested in administrative efficiency and centralization. The West Indians talked about political independence. At the conference, a compromise was worked out. The West Indian Meteorological Services and the University of the West Indies as a College of London University were set up, and plans were made for the creation of a political federation that would unite the various territories and eventually culminate in the political independence of the region. These new regional organizations joined others already in existence, such as the Caribbean Union of Teachers, established in 1935, the Associated Chambers of Commerce, organized in 1917, and the Caribbean Labor Congress, inaugurated in 1945. The federation began inauspiciously with the leading politicians in Jamaica, Norman Manley, then Prime Minister, and Alexander Bustamante, whose widow, Lady Gladys Bustamante, made her transition at age 97, and in Trinidad and Tobago, Eric Williams, refusing to contest the federal elections. This uneasy federation of 10 island territories, Jamaica, Trinidad and Tobago, Barbados, Grenada, St. Kitts, Nevis, Anguilla, Antigua and Barbuda, St. Lucia, St. Vincent and the Grenadines, Dominica, and Montserrat, lasted from 1957 to 1961, when Jamaica opted to leave. Doomed from the start by lukewarm popular support, the federation quickly floundered on the island's uncompromisingly parochial interests, especially those of the principal participants, Trinidad and Tobago and Jamaica. The former would not accept unrestricted freedom of movement. The latter would not accept a binding customs union. On September 19, 1961, some 54% of the Jamaican electorate voted to end their participation. It was the lowest popular vote in any Jamaican election, but the government accepted the decision and initiated the plans to request complete independence for the state. Attempts by Trinidad and Tobago and Barbados to salvage the federation after the withdrawal of Jamaica failed.
Get 'em in, get 'em in. That sun is hot and plenty bright. Let's get on to business and get home tonight. Bid 'em in. Auctioning slaves is a real high art. Bring that young gal, Roy, she's good for a start. Bid 'em in, get 'em in. Now here's a real goodbye on about 15. Her great-grandmammy was a die-homey queen. Just look at her face, she sure ain't homely. Like Sheba in the Bible, she's black but comely. Bid 'em in. Gonna start at 3. Can I hear 3? Step up, gents, take a good look, see. Cause I know you'll want her once you've seen her. She's young and right, make a darn good breeder. Bid 'em in. She's good in the field, she can sew and cook. Strip her down, Roy, let the gentleman look. She's full up front and ample behind. Examine her teeth if you got a mind. Bid 'em in, get 'em in. There's a bid of 3 from a man who's thrifty. 325, can I hear 350? Your money ain't earning you much in the banks. Turn around, Roy, let him look at her flanks. Bid 'em in. 350's bidding I'm looking for. At $400 she's a bargain sure. 4 is the bid, 450. $500 now look alive. Bid 'em in, get 'em in. Don't mind them tears, that's one of her tricks. 550's bidding, who'll say 6? She's healthy and strong and well equipped. Make a fine lady's maid when she's properly whipped. Bid 'em in. 650, don't be slow. 7 is the bid, gonna let her go. At 7 she's going, going, gone. Pull her down, Roy, bring the next one on. Bid 'em in, get 'em in, bid 'em in.
An estimated 8 to 15 million Africans reached the Americas from the 16th through the 19th century. The Middle Passage was the most infamous route of this triangular trade. Although danger lurked constantly throughout the voyage across the Atlantic, the greatest danger to the slave ships always came when they were loading on the African coast. Once aboard the ships, the Negroes realized that they were being sent far away from home, and often there was violence even before the ship set sail. However, most of these uprisings were easily put down. Others jumped overboard and plunged from the ship into the sea, choosing to either drown or be devoured by bloodthirsty sharks rather than be taken from their homeland. Here's historian and author Barbadian-born Kamau Brafitt as we talked about the middle passage of our ancestors.
So many millions, perhaps it's difficult ever to know how many people perish, because you have statistics which say that at the moment of emancipation, there were 90,000 slaves in Barbados, whatever that means. But that doesn't tell you how many slaves actually came into the island and how many died. And you have to remember that they gave a slave only 9 years period of life. So that untold numbers, let us say, perished in the limestone soil of Barbados.
And a lifespan of 9 years.
Right, that's what they calculated on. They felt they would burn up batteries out in 9 years. That was what you calculated. When they looked at you, they said, does he have 9, 10, or 6 years? And you were costed accordingly. But an adult man in his prime, 22, 23 years old, was expected to live until, just after 30. After that, he would have no teeth, he would have no lungs, he would have no cajones.
African breed. My poem is a talking African drum, African queen everlasting. Another poem of wisdom, another poem of substance and seed. Exposing a system, the middle passage, slavery, cruelty and greed. Compelled to be ignorant, never to read. The resistance was theirs and the will to succeed. Taken from Africa, the African soldiers to the shores of America. A slave to the highest bidder, still with courage and fortitude. Indeed, many nations, nationalities participated and decreed the barbaric, demented, holocaustic, yes, holocaustic system to succeed. Those who suffered most is part of my poetic speed. To mention a claim of their hypocrisy and selfish need. Excavation made in downtown New York City. Graveyard of African slaves. The real story at the capital city. American Indians were killed in like manner to proceed. To find a main cornerstone, the builder's breed. The foundation of Manhattan, tis an elephant steel. My buried culture in the Americas, the Caribbean deep sea will yield. The North, like the South, were conspirators, I scream. Back in Africa lies my African dream. The conclusion of the African breed.
One Caribbean national said, when asked what she feels about the celebration of Emancipation Day, said, quote, "Sometimes I feel that we can safely cancel this holiday because generally we don't have a collective consciousness about the significance of the day. For the most part, it is just another holiday, another day to lime without any serious reflection or thanksgiving. It is a pity, really, but when one is so far removed from the actual horrors of slavery and not nurtured in your history, then it's not surprising at all." Unquote.
"On pirates, yes, they rob us. Sold I to the merchant ship. Minutes after they took us from the bottomless pit. But my aim was made strong by the hand of the Almighty. Forward in this generation, triumphantly, all I ever had is songs of freedom. Won't you hear to sing? Sweet songs of freedom, emancipate us
tremendously. None but ourselves can free our minds. Have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you give to see the songs of freedom? Won't you give to see redemption? From mental slavery, none but ourselves can free our minds. Have no fear for atomic energy,
none of them can stop the time.
How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look?
Some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the food. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom?
In many Caribbean countries, the Emancipation Day celebration is a part of Carnival. The celebration includes various events held at Emancipation Roundabout in St. Michael, Barbados. This parish is the site of a statue honoring Boussa, the leader of the slave revolt at Bailey's Plantation. In Bermuda, celebration is better known as the first day of Cup Match, an annual two-day cricket competition between the St. George's and Somerset cricket clubs. Accompanied by Hugh Masekela and his band, here is Miriam Makeba with the South African freedom song, Soweto Blues.
Soweto Blues was written for me by Hugh Masekela after the June 16th uprising.
The children got a letter from the master. It said no more Xhosa, Sotho, no more Zulu. Refusing to comply, they sent an answer. That's when the policemen came to the rescue. Well, our children were flying.
Well, I certainly hope you enjoyed Caribbean Forum this week. I'd like to thank my special guest, Dr. Ivor Griffith, of Fort Valley State University, and also Mr. Nazim Burke. Grenada, leader of the opposition there in Grenada. I'm Ron Bob Semple, and certainly hope that you've enjoyed the broadcast this week. You can always drop me a line at ron@uhururadio.com. That's ron@uhururadio.com. You can stay tuned for programming here on the Uhuru Radio Network 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Invite you to tune into Africa Live on Sunday, 11 a.m. Eastern Time. I'll be hosting that broadcast this week, and we'll return at 7 p.m. on Sunday evening for Golden Sunday Sounds, where we relive those romantic love songs of yesteryear. Watch your thoughts. They become words. Watch your words. They become actions. Watch your actions, they become habits. Watch your habits, they become character. Watch your character, for it becomes your destiny. If it is to be, it is up to me, because we do have many rivers to cross. I'm Ron Bob Semple. Stay strong and be aware.
But I can't seem to find my way over. Wandering, I am lost. As I travel.
Caribbean Forum here on the Uhuru Radio Network, where we expand our ability to communicate and unite the struggles of African people towards victory and independence in our lifetime. I'm Ron Bob Semple, and here in the Forum, we examine issues that affect Caribbean and Caribbean American nationals both at home and across the diaspora. We bring you news, views, interviews, thought-provoking discussions, Caribbean theater of the mind, and musical interludes. Well, the Slavery Abolition Act of 1833 ended slavery in the British Empire on August 1st, 1834. Emancipation Day is widely observed in the British West Indies during the first week of August. In many Caribbean countries, the Emancipation Day celebration is part of Carnival. Well, joining us on the forum today will be Dr. Ivlaw Griffith, the ninth president of the Fort Valley State University in Georgia, as he celebrates his first anniversary. We'll take you to Grenada and chat with the former finance minister, Nazim Burke, who was elected opposition leader of the National Democratic Party. So tell someone the Caribbean Forum is on the air for the next 2 hours here on the Uhuru Radio Network, where you can log on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, for live and recorded programming. Yes, you can tune into all the broadcasts and be enlightened by programs such as Africa Live, Diasporic Music, Reparations in Action, and Glenn Ford's Black Agenda Report. Also, please feel free to log on to uhurunews.com or uhururadio.com and click on the donate button and make whatever contribution you deem affordable so that you can keep your radio station on the air. We invite all you listeners to support this radio station by becoming sustaining paying members. As a paying member, you will receive unlimited download access to more than 150 speeches by Chairman Amalia Shetella, found in the archives section of uhururadio.com. All other archives, programs heard on the station are freely available for downloads or to hear through your browser. For a minimum contribution of just $10 per month, you can become a sustaining member and gain access to these speeches spanning 4 decades of theoretical and practical leadership from the chairman of the African People's Socialist Party. So subscribe today and support the online voice of the International African Revolution. Well, for this past month, things have been rather hectic, in that comrades were part of the 2014 Cadre Development School, which was held at the Uhuru House headquarters in St. Petersburg, Florida. Oh, was it intense. And it was extremely successful, and we salute all those that were involved in the planning, of course, under the leadership of Chairman Omari Yeshetela. So if there's someone you know who does not have access to a computer right now, let them know that they can listen to us via their iPhone, their iPad, their Android, by dialing 1-425-905-1825. That's 1-425-905-1825. Thank you for tuning in to Caribbean Forum. Here is Peter Tosh singing about the African.
Clarendon, and if you come from Portland, and if you come from Westmoreland, you're an African. So don't care where you come from, as long as you're a black man, you're an African. No mind your nationality, you have got the identity of an African. Cause if you come from Trinidad, and if you come from Nassau, and if you come from Cuba, you are an African. So don't care where you come from, as long as you're a black man, you're an African. There is no rejection, you're an African. Cause if your flexion high, 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 your flexion low, and if your flexion in between, you're an African. So don't care where you come from, as long as you're a black man, you're an African. Segregation, you're an African. Cause if you go to the Catholic, and if you go to the Methodist, and if you go to the Church of God, you're an African. So don't care where you come from, as long as you're a black man, you're an African. You are an African.
make it good and say. Open your eyes and don't be blind, cause enemies come from behind. Keep the faith as the sun shine. Jah's fire will be burning. No wicked man will be running. Say, somewhere in Africa, a dozen trumpet fight, gonna stomp this world. A fire.
Life, oh life.
the Caribbean Forum. It's a musical interlude this morning. We started with Peter Tosh, African, Somewhere in Africa, Meta, and the Cornerstones. In the background is Judy Mowat, King of Kings. Kasihira Uhuru. We're emphasizing African internationalism. Seeking the liberation of our people. The liberation of Africa. Here is Bunny Wailer. The late Bunny Wailer. Liberation.
If you are living in a marketplace and you're no buyer or seller, you'll find yourself left in space, subject to be bought or sold. If you are living in a tenant yard and you are not the landowner, you'll get a notice from your landlord to leave sooner or later.
Prasad, the Uhuru Radio Network has news and culture direct from Africa, the Caribbean, and wherever Africans are working, playing, and fighting to be free. Support Uhuru today.
It's now time to order your signed copy of Omali Ishatela's new book, The Uneasy Equilibrium, The African Revolution versus Parasitic Capitalism. Chairman O'Malley's groundbreaking political analysis shows the way forward for people looking for answers during this period of crisis for imperialism, a crisis that offers great opportunity for colonized peoples everywhere. This latest book by the founder and leader of the African Socialist International and the Uhuru Movement costs $29.99 and will come off the press this spring. Order now at burningspearmarketplace.com or by calling 727-824-5700 and your copy will be personally signed by the author. Call 727-824-5700 or visit burningspearmarketplace.com today to pre-order your commemorative signed copy of The Uneasy Equilibrium, The African Revolution versus Parasitic Capitalism. Uhuru means freedom.
The Black is Back Coalition for Social Justice, Peace, and Reparations is having its international conference in Philadelphia on August 16th and 17th, and you are invited. It's all happening at Uhuru Furniture and Collectibles at 832 North Broad Street. Theme of the conference is Resist U.S. Wars and Occupations in the U.S. and Abroad. Reparations Now. Learn from Chairman O'Malley Ishitella of the African Socialist International. See Ron Bob Simple as Marcus Garvey. Hear Glenn Ford speak on Ukraine and the Crisis of Empire. Listen to Lisa Davis expose the health attack on our community. The conference is free and open to the public. For more information, call 727-821-6621. Again, 727-821-6621 or visit blackisbackcoalition.org. Don't forget, August 16th and 17th in Philadelphia, Black is Back.
Here's edutainment on the water you should not miss. It's the fourth annual Marcus Garvey Legacy Cruise for 6 days from December 14th through 20th, 2014, aboard the Carnival Breeze leaving out of Miami, Florida, and stopping in Grand Turk, Ocho Rios, Jamaica, and Nassau, Bahamas. Edutainment on board will feature O'Malley Yeshitela, chairman of the African Socialist International, and renowned actor Ron Bob Semple with The Spirit of Garvey. For more details and to place your booking for the fourth annual Marcus Garvey Legacy Cruise, call Freedom Horizons Travel Agency at 866-708-4009. The exclusive travel agency for the fourth annual Marcus Garvey Legacy Cruise. Log on to uhurulegacycruise.org for itinerary and pricing information. Call Freedom Horizons today at 866-708-4009, 866-708-4009, or visit uhurulegacycruise.org, because if you miss it, you'll regret it.
Information, ideas, reality. That's what the Burning Spear newspaper offers you each month. Truth about government, society, entertainment, and the world around you. The Burning Spear is the oldest Black Power newspaper in existence, and your one-year subscription is only $25. Get the insight and perspective that the mass media machine cannot and will not deliver. Read dynamic articles on the most pressing issues affecting the lives of African workers in the U.S., Africa, and around the world. Each month, you'll find real political analysis of the crisis of parasitic capitalism, insight into world and local events, and a focus on the realities and struggles in the heart of the hood, expressing the vision and voice of the African working class. Uncompromising truth, unwavering focus. The Burning Spear newspaper. This is Black Power in the 21st century. Subscribe today and don't get fooled again. Order your subscription now. Go to burningspearmarketplace.com and click on Spear. That's burningspearmarketplace.com and click on Spear. Uhuru.
On November 15th and 16th, Burning Spear Media will hold our annual fundraising radiothon. We are the Burning Spear newspaper, the longest-running African revolutionary journal in continuous publication since the 1960s. We are Uhuru News, the online voice of the international African revolution. We are Uhuru Radio, bringing you news,
music,
analysis, and information every week to every corner of the African world.
Your world.
We are your media, telling the truth about your world. The truth you won't get from your local newspaper,
the New York Times,
the BBC,
CNN,
or Fox News. We need your support to survive and grow.
You don't have to pledge to white agenda media networks that make empty promises to represent your interests. Burning Spear Media is by and for African people, talking about our reality.
Our reality.
Our condition.
Our conditions.
And our goals for freedom.
Freedom.
And liberation.
Liberation.
Tune in November 15th and 16th for our two-day radiothon, a live online radio and video broadcast with 20 hours of special guests, music, and reports from our community. Liberate your media with your dollars. Tell your friends. Organize a viewing party. Spread the word. Africa is on the rise, and the future is black.
There are more U.S. reporters covering the New York Yankees than there are covering the entire continent of Africa.
And it's a shame when we as African people, we make up damn near the majority of the city, but we have to fight to get on white ruling class media.
That tells you something about the priorities of the news media in this country.
We are engaged in a war of ideas.
Warning.
You're locked in to Uhuru Radio.
Stand by.
Right here, right now.
APSP, UhuruRadio.com.
Alright then, I and I no mix with the wicked men. I and I said trample the
Uhuru Radio was envisioned as a means by which our community, our people, our party, our revolutionary aspirations could contend with the ruling class in this war of ideas that contributes to maintaining the oppression of African people. Part of what African internationalism, Garveyism in the 21st century is about is ending that isolation, is bringing African people together in common struggle. And Uhuru Radio, it allows Africans in any place in the world to have access to other Africans so that reinforcement are always on the way, no matter where it is that we're struggling and no matter what may be the temporary setbacks.
Finally, the station you've been looking for.
Uhuru Radio. No degrading lyrics.
I never call you my bitch or even my boo. It's so much in the name and so much more than you.
Progressive.
And you love her like you are. So you buy her a diamond if I want to die. Oh, don't you think there's something wrong with it?
And millions of dollars leave Sierra Leone in the form of diamonds, yet the people who mine the diamonds make 30 cents a day and a cup of rice. That's the reality all over Africa.
And revolutionary.
AFDEF is an organization of the Uhuru movement that was built in 2007 in order to organize African doctors, nurses, scientists, engineers, and other skilled Africans around the world to coordinate a variety of development projects that work to transform the miserable conditions of existence that have been imposed on our people around the world.
APSP, UhuruRadio.com.
Uhuru Radio is developing a new programming schedule to include more music, cultural, educational, political, and multilingual programs from around the world. We are professionalizing the technical delivery of our programming, improving our sound quality and presentation. We're working to make our audio stream more accessible through mobile devices and distribution networks. This is your media, Uhuru News, Uhuru Radio, and the Burning Spear newspaper, the voice of the International African Revolution. We rely on your support to get the truth out about our struggle for freedom. Become a member today. Your donation of any amount will make a difference.
APSP, UhuruRadio.com.
The importance of black media is that it is important to educate our people globally, not just West Caribbean. Global education about monetary money matters is very extremely important because the whole game comes down to money at the end of the day. So Uhuru Radio is playing a very important global part of assisting people in understanding that which is the basis of living.
You're listening to Caribbean Forum with Ron Bob Semple, the voice of reason. You're listening to Caribbean Forum. with Ron Bob Semple.
This is Caribbean Forum with Ron Bob Semple, the voice of reason.
Examine issues that affect Caribbean and Caribbean American nationals both at home and across the diaspora. Well, my next guest is no stranger to Caribbean Forum. He's the ninth president of the Fort Valley State University in Georgia, Dr. Ivlock Griffith. Good morning and welcome back to Caribbean Forum.
Good morning and delighted to be back, Ron.
Absolutely. I'm sorry, Doctor, you're just having a little technical problem. Can you hear me clearly, Doctor?
Surely can.
Well, Doctor, you are now celebrating your first anniversary as president. First of all, congratulations to you.
And thank you very much.
How would you rate your first year as president of FVSU?
I think the rating would have to be in kind of two categories. One category would have to look at the context in which I took leadership of the university and offer some ratings there. And another category in the context of what has been accomplished in spite of the circumstances. In the first category, I would say I gave myself an A-. an A minus.
Okay.
And in the second category of accomplishments, in the context of what I took over, I would give myself a B. Because we have a lot to do still in what I call the dreaming and the doing to go to the next level.
What are some of the new programs that you have initiated?
The new programs that I initiated are in the context of what I inherited, in the context of where I think we need to go. And inherited a situation where our enrollment had been in the decline, where our retention was not as strong as it should be. And so one of the programs I initiated precisely to help strengthen recruitment and strengthen retention is the Honors Program. I had served splendidly for 5 years as a dean of an Honors College at Florida International University. I know what the value of Honors is for both recruitment and retention. And so I'm very proud of the fact that we'll be launching an Honors Program initial class in a few weeks with about 60 students. Honors is a higher level of academic preparedness that will enable those students in the Honors Program, and I do want to see the Honors Program become a college in a few years, those Honors students being able to take the weaker students and help them, and they will sustain and they will graduate on time. I also created an undergraduate research program. I've done the same thing at Florida International, and I started the same thing at York in New York. As a matter of fact, York invited me back this past May for the 5th anniversary of the program I started in New York. So I know the value of undergraduate research, and I know that the combined impact of honors and undergraduate research will help us to lift our recruitment and lift our retention. Let me mention one other that I inaugurated last year. And again, it has to do with the context of our enrollment and the context of what the world has changed to become. I launched a global agenda program. The idea is to recruit international students. The idea is to do study abroad more robustly. The idea is to raise funds so we can do those things. And an important part of that global agenda is establishment of a council of individuals. Some are diplomatic, some are academic, some are corporate. And actually just this past Monday, we had the second council of the meeting in Atlanta hosted by Ambassador Geoffrey Tenelabe of Nigeria. He's a consul general of Nigeria in the southern United States. He's responsible for, I think, 17 states. And the council's intent is to help me pursue the global agenda. Part of the global agenda we're going to be seeing later on this month, Ron. And maybe we can talk a little bit more later on, but certainly I would love a chance to have one or two of my people come talk about it later on. And that is, I'm hosting the first international cultural festival and soccer exhibition. It's part of the global thrust. We'll be having an Afro-Cuban band, we'll be having a Trinidadian steel band, we're having Bahamian Mokojumbi. We need to be able in Fort Valley to connect with the world in cultural and other ways. We'll be hosting a Nigerian basketball team later on this year. We'll be establishing our first international alumni chapter in the Bahamas. The global is one of the critical things for me that was part of the first year's pursuits.
Dr. Griffith, I know one of your associates, I think it was Dr. Carter, had joined me a few weeks ago. And we were talking about the global agenda, and we also talked about it. I'd like you to just flush it out a little bit more for our listeners as to what it really entails.
Well, you may know the name Fulbright. Fulbright Scholars, both for professors who go across the world from the United States to other parts of the world, from the other parts of the world to the United States. And there is a Fulbright haze, which students back and forth. Fulbright was a senator back in the 40s, and he established this program because he was very concerned back in the 40s that the United States was not connecting enough with the world. And the value added of that view in the 1940s has been even enhanced, because since the 1940s, what Thomas Friedman called the flatness of the world in the book he wrote in 2005 called The World is Flat, the flatness of the world is even more apparent. And so for me, coming to Fort Valley State University, knowing the realities of the connectivity of the world, the flatness of the world, it was for me not a desirability, but a necessity to have a global agenda. And that agenda here has several components to it. What must we do at the recruitment level? What must we do at the student exchange level? What must we do with the faculty research collaboration? What must we do with the cultural and sports component? We've got 11 sports. I'll be introducing soccer as a 12th sport. That is intended to connect the international. And so in addition to the Global Initiatives Council, which is a group of diplomats, businessmen, and others who help us to strategize, for example, at the meeting on Monday, a member of the Global Council who is a professor of biochemistry at Morehouse Medical School had just come back from a one-month trip in Ghana. And his task while he was in Ghana doing research and collaboration and instruction for Morehouse Medical School, as a member of the council, he took letters from me to different private high schools in Ghana. Matter of fact, he attended one of those private high schools. The idea was to begin to build partnerships in Ghana, and this is not the only pursuit we're doing in Ghana, that will allow us to build a pipeline of bringing students, will allow us to build a pipeline of research collaboration. And so that is part of the global. There is a limitation I have in that I don't have scholarships as yet for international students. So I need to build, with the council's assistance, that corpus of support that will allow us to help international students when they come. But we also have a study abroad component that we'll be pursuing. As a matter of fact, when I was in Orlando a few weeks ago, met, among other folks at the University of Central Florida, Ambassador Harriet Elam Thomas. Her husband is Grenadian. She's an American, has been in the diplomatic corps for a long time. She's the director of the diplomacy program at UCF. And it turns out that she's a member of the Institute for International Education Board of Trustees. And so she's come on board to help us build the linkages with the International Institute of Education that will allow us to do Fulbright Haze for study abroad for students. I've said it before many times in Atlanta, in Fort Valley. Part of the competitiveness we need to build is to allow our students to feel comfortable, A, knowing the world, and B, going to any part of the world when they graduate, if they're competitive enough. And so Ambassador Elam Thomas is going to help us to connect and build those capacities so we can get the study abroad going. So the global agenda is quite critical. Earlier this year, I visited in Guyana and Trinidad, government officials in Guyana, university officials in Guyana, government officials in Trinidad, Ministry of Food, university officials in Trinidad. University of West Indies Trinidad sent a delegation in May of people from their agriculture and their forestry. We're right now looking at a memorandum. They have sent a draft. My chief legal officer is reviewing it with his team. I signed a memorandum of understanding with University of Guyana when the chancellor there, the vice chancellor, came with a delegation to my inauguration in April. And he spoke at the inauguration. Very proud of the fact that I'm the first University of Guyana student who got a distinction ever in the history, but also be the first person to head a major university any place in the world. So he was quite proud, as I think I would be proud if were a member of my university. And so we've signed an agreement, and the idea is to, and we're working with several other places, building the potential for the partnerships for a pipeline. We've got conversations happening with folks in Ghana, conversations happening with folks in Nigeria. In April, I hosted a 19-member delegation from the state of Kwara in Nigeria, legislators. Quara State also has something that we've got an interest in.
Okay.
They have agriculture as a main industry. They have needs for agricultural extension. That's one of our strengths as a land-grant university. So we've got conversations beginning with Guyana, with Trinidad, conversations beginning with Ghana, with Nigeria.
Right.
Only this week, a member of the Global Initiatives Council, who is at the Commonwealth Secretariat, Dr. Joan Wasike, introduced me to the Vice Chancellor of Veritas University in Abuja. We started a conversation there.
Right. What other countries on the continent, Doctor, that have been earmarked for this global agenda?
Well, we're working very selectively, knowing that we've got to minimize our spread. And so we're focusing on Ghana and Nigeria as a first instance on the continent. We're focusing on China, and I'll come back to China later on. We're focusing on Trinidad and Tobago, and then we'll go to Jamaica afterwards. We had preliminary conversations regarding Malaysia, because one of the challenges we have is, in the absence of an English as a second, we're focusing also on Brazil. I sent Dr. Carter to Brazil last September, and we're working our way to get part of the Brazil Scientific Mobility Project. But we realize from the Brazil in particular that not having an English as a second language program is hurting us. And so I've tasked Dr. Carter, the dean of our education school, and my director of institutional research, we've got to establish an ESL program. And so in the absence of an English as a second language program, we've been going to places with English or significant English proficiency first, China being an exception. And we know that China has capacity, and they also have their English as a second language program. So we've been not trying to do too many places at the same time. We've got to be able to build capacity, have some low-hanging fruit, have some successes, and then build on those successes.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to Caribbean Forum with me, Ron Bob Semple, here on the Uhuru Radio Network. Saturday mornings from 9 until 11 a.m. Eastern Time, we return on Sunday evenings with our Golden Sunday Sounds, where we relive those romantic love songs of yesteryear. My special guest this morning is no stranger to Caribbean Forum, Dr. Ivlo Griffith. He's the current president of the Fort Valley State University in Georgia, and he has been the provost and senior vice president at York College in New York City. Dr. Griffith, you mentioned one of the programs, one of the new programs there at Fort Valley, is the International Soccer Expo. I know this is coming on the heels of the World Cup, so
right.
I'm sure there's a lot of excitement.
Absolutely.
When does that program take effect?
Well, the soccer exhibition and International Cultural Festival, the intent is to make it an annual Labor Day weekend event. And so we're starting this year, August 30. It's going to be 9 to 6. Let me give you a sense of what that day will look like. We'll start with a parade in the city of Fort Valley, our ROTC battalion. Some of our athletes, not the soccer players, will be playing in the game. We don't want to get them too tired and mar their performance. After that parade, we'll have a small opening ceremony. The mayor of Fort Valley, other mayors, other public officials, soccer officials, a little ceremony. And then we'll have the soccer between 10 a.m. and 1 p.m. We've got four teams lined up already. And I'll tell you as an aside, Ron, I knew that soccer was big every place, but I never realized how big soccer was just in Georgia alone. There's one league from Atlanta that is sending us two teams. And the manager of the league gave us a glimpse of some of what the league's history was like. He said the league started in 2003. Started in 2003 with 30 teams. The league now has 80 teams, 8-0.
Wow.
Our league has 1,450 people, ranging in ages 16 to 50, 5-0. soccer is not just teenagers and people in the 20s and 30s. People in the 40s playing soccer. And league also has 650 junior members. They're sending us two teams, and then we're having two teams from the county that we're in, Peach County. And so between 10 a.m. and 1 p.m., we have soccer. And then from 1 to 6, we have music, we have dance, we have giveaways. We have, among the folks on the entertainment side, we have an Afro-Cuban band. The name escapes me right now. We have a Mokojambi from Bahamian, a part of the world. We have a Trinidadian steel band. And then we have some other local from Macon, from Fort Valley. We'll be having lots of giveaways. One of the things that we do as one of the world's leading small ruminant research centers, we specialize in sheep and goat as some of our small ruminant specialties. And we produce five flavors of goat milk ice cream. We'll be having a goat milk ice cream giveaway. We produce goat milk soap. We'll be selling goat milk soap. And the opportunity to come and taste different foods from different parts of the world, have vendors. Some of the vendors will be all free. Any health screening is going to be free, no charge to any of the vendors. And we're making a very minimal charge, $100 to come and set up and showcase what you do. And so the idea is to start with something that builds connectivity to the rest of the world. The food, the music, and soccer, which is a global sport in every way. We want to make that an annual event that allows us to showcase the university, bring people to campus, allow people to come to the place with their family. We're saying to folks, bring your kids. The kids are free. Anyone under 12 is free admission. And everyone over 12 is $2, but our students are all free. Mm. All 2,000 of our students. Many students will go away for the weekend. We know that. But students are free. Anyone 12 and under is free. And everybody else is $2.
You mentioned global. Yes, you mentioned the goat milk. Dr. Griffith, there is a farming program there at the university?
Mm-hmm. Fort Valley State University is one of two of Georgia's land-grant universities. The land-grant universities across the nation are the places where agriculture and agriculture technology and agricultural sciences are significant. We've got a responsibility not only to teach agricultural subjects, but also to do agriculture research, and to talk with farmers, to help farmers. We've got an 18-wheeler mobile unit that goes into the communities. Mm. There's a whole host of what we call extension. The term generally uses outreach. I've ordered that we buy a second one. Very expensive, about $900,000, but we're in the process of working to get a second one. And so part of our land grant responsibilities makes agriculture. As a matter of fact, 2 weeks ago, the rankings came out. We are at Fort Valley number 6 in the nation in producing black folk in the agricultural sciences, black folk in statistics and mathematics. And that in part is because for a long time, agriculture and the agricultural technology, we have an MPH program. We have the only 4-year accredited program in the state of Georgia on veterinary technology. You should see the facilities there. We have agricultural economics. We have engineering technology for agricultural sciences. So there's a whole range of agriculture technology-related research. We have a research team working on one of the fastest-growing plants in the world, polonia. How can that plant be used for bioenergy? How can that plant be used for timber? And so the agricultural sciences is one of our major strengths.
Well, we've been chatting with Dr. Ivelaw Griffith, the 9th president of Fort Valley State University in Georgia. Dr. Griffith, as usual, it's always a pleasure chatting with you. If one would like to get further information with regard to the university, how can one do that?
Well, there are several ways to do that. easiest way is to go on the web, www.fvsu.edu. Second way is by phone. And I'm looking for the phone number right here. And I don't have it at the top of my hand. You can also get us on Facebook. You can get us on Twitter. You can tweet me. You can tweet me directly at hashtag IBlogGriffith. You get me right there. You can tweet our university, hashtag FVSU. And so there are a variety of ways. We have a presence on Instagram. We have a presence in the broad social media world, Facebook. And as you know, Facebook is something that is more for folk like us, Ron. The younger folks don't want Facebook too much. They want Instagram and Twitter and Snapchat.
Instant.
Snapchat and YouTube. So we've got a YouTube presence. We've got a Snapchat presence. We've got a Facebook presence. We've got a Twitter presence. As a matter of fact, the first day on my presidential watch, I sent a tweet at 7:22. I started July number 7:22, and I sent a tweet at 7:22, on the job, loving it. So I established a Twitter presence. I established an Instagram presence. We have our YouTube channel. We have a broad presence in the social media sphere. So there are a variety of ways to get in touch with us. But I'm going to send you, Ron, the promotional flight is in Spanish and in French, Spanish and in English, for our inaugural. We're excited about it, the inaugural International Cultural Festival and Soccer Exhibition.
Please do.
And we make it an annual event, so folks in Florida and a lot of places can come on down. So I was pleased to see it in the New York base. Guyana Cultural Association online magazine.
Right, absolutely.
There's interest in New York. Some people have Georgia connections. We want people from other parts of the United States to come to an annual destination in the Valley.
Dr. Ivlaw Griffith, the president of Fort Valley State University. Thank you, my brother, and all the best to you, as usual.
Thank you, Ron. Have a great day. And I'll send you that stuff.
Thank you much. And we'll take you to Grenada next. Stay tuned.
You're listening to WhoRadio.com, voice of the International African Revolution.
To the little gods we can, we could make Grenada better.
on my TV to check out the daily news. The things I see does have me confused, eh? The number of crime and violence I see on the street. Sometimes I'm frightened, I cannot eat, eh? But when you check out Grenada, we have no diamond and silver, but we just live in unity, and that's what makes me happy. Is then I come to realize, oh God, my country is a paradise. Hey, I love my Grenada, my homeland forever. Sing the chorus louder, tell them about Grenada, the land of my grandfather. She will always prosper. Oh, my Grenada, land of peace and culture. Grenada is such a paradise, oh God. But a lot of folks don't realize, if we learn to pull we hand, do the little that we can, we could make Grenada a better land. Hey. Mommy, oh. Oh my Grenada.
Well, welcome back to Caribbean Forum. There's a Jamu with Grenada. We'll take you to the Spice Island right now. And joining us on the line is a former finance minister of the government of Grenada. He's now the leader of the opposition, the National Democratic Party. Mr. Nazim Burke, good morning and welcome to Caribbean Forum.
Good morning to you, Ron, and good morning to all of your listeners at home in New York and, of course, in the rest of the diaspora, wherever you've been heard. Good morning to everybody.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. What's the weather there like in Grenada?
A little bit overcast, but a mixture of sun and clouds. So all in all, still good weather. It's not raining at the moment, so we're hoping for the best today.
I guess that's a daily forecast, I imagine.
That's right.
Mr. Burke, there is a situation that's occurring in the Caribbean that is creating a lot of concern. And that is that the chikungunya outbreak, that virus that is mosquito-borne, that continues to grow as the Caribbean case count now nears 1,500. Now, Grenada, as of a month ago, recorded some 5 cases. I certainly hope that has not increased, but I wouldn't be surprised if it has. And authorities have moved to enforce the Mosquito Destruction Act of 1952. How are the citizens of Grenada reacting to this virus, sir?
Well, let me say, first of all, that we are in complete agreement with you that this is a source of grave concern, not only to Grenada, not only to the Caribbean region, but to all of the Americas. This is the very first time, according to the information that we have, this is the very first time in history that this virus has been transmitted to the Americas. No country in this part of the world has had this problem before. As of July 25th, according to the information that is available to us, 27 countries in the Western Hemisphere have now been affected. A total of 470,000 persons are suspected of having the virus, with another 6,000 or so cases being reported and are being tested at the moment, according to the Pan American Health Organization. So this is an extremely difficult situation, and because the disease, or the virus, I should say, is not known to the region, nobody is immune to it, because from what I understand, you can only catch this this virus or contract this virus once. And once you've been bitten once, then you're sort of safe for the rest of your life. Because it's new to the region, it has a greater likelihood of spreading because nobody is immune from it at the moment. In Grenada's case, the situation is perhaps, if I may say so, more favorable than most of the other countries that I've seen reported, with the exception of the smaller sister island of Carriacou, where there are, according to the Ministry of Health officials, as many as 70 cases have now been reported there. On mainland Grenada, only about 4 or 5 cases. And those cases appear to involve persons who have traveled from Grenada, from Carriacou, I'm sorry, to Grenada. So it's a case of importation where the mosquito then bites the individual and spreads the thing. So this is a troubling situation, but all of the reports seem to indicate that Grenada is more fortunate than most of the other Caribbean islands. As the other countries have done, Grenada has established a task force. The main focus, of course, in the beginning for this task force was education of the public around the issues, as well as vector control, you know, because the virus is spread by the mosquito, and because one has to be bitten by the mosquito in order to contract the virus, it is not a contagious thing as such. Then, of course, controlling mosquitoes and is essential to this entire process. And so education of the public, vector control, cleanups, and that sort of thing, ensuring that water is not lying around in certain areas and so on, was something that the task force, I understand, was focusing on very heavily. Now that the virus has been discovered or has emerged in Grenada, of course, that task force will have the added responsibility of dealing with the responses to that virus. So I suppose it's in that context that this particular act that you mentioned of 1952 has been enforced. And, of course, we hope that this does not get out of hand.
Now, this could cause a lot of concern, Mr. Burke, being, you know, the Caribbean is noted for a lot of water. And I think you touched on it lightly a few moments ago as to the specific precautions that the government is currently taking to, I know you mentioned education, but what other precautionary measures are being taken?
The key thing, I mean, of course, I'm not in government and I do not work in the Ministry of Health as such.
Okay.
So some of the finer details, some of the, you know, the finer details I may not be able to give you.
Right, understandably.
But as a general rule, I think what they're trying to do is to control the likelihood, or to limit the likelihood, that the mosquito is going to have breeding grounds, you know,
right.
Grounds where they can spread, where they can be attracted. So collection of water in buckets and pails around houses, in swamps and pools and so on, that will attract them, where they can lay their eggs and you know, in a way increase the size of the mosquito population and the likelihood that it will spread the virus are the kinds of things that they are controlling. I suppose some fumigation of areas are taking place, you know, smoking out areas that are damp and just areas that will provide a good habitat for the mosquito. Because, as I said, the control of the mosquito is what is essential to controlling the virus.
How concerned is the man in the street or the woman in the street?
From what I have picked up, I've been out of the country for almost a month, but from what I've picked up just coming back in, I do not get a sense of alarm, you know, and I think it is partly because while there have been greater numbers on the island of Carriacou, which I've not visited since my return, I do not get the sense that, you know, there's an alarm going on, because it has not been a massive outbreak at this point.
Right.
As I said, Grenada appears to be one of the more, you know, favored countries or favorable countries in this respect. And so it is not a widespread concern as you walk through the streets that I'm going to contract the virus. From what I'm hearing also, it would appear that even the cases that have been reported of suspected of having the virus, the symptomology is such that people are not laying in bed for 7 or 8 days. You know, the first day or two, they seem to be immobile to some extent. But on the third or fourth day, people are able to go back to their normal way of living, even if it is believed that they have the virus. Because it is not contagious, it does not create an immediate and direct harm, you know, interfacing or intermingling with those persons. So the key is mosquito control.
Absolutely. Mr. Burke, it has now been almost 18 months since you have been the leader of the main opposition, the National Democratic Party, after losing all 15 seats to the new National Party of Prime Minister Keith Mitchell. How challenging has it been to again win the hearts and minds of Grenadians?
Well, let me say, first of all, that while it has been 18 months since the general elections in which we lost quite resoundingly, yes, I have only assumed the leadership of the party since April of this year. So it is a lesser period of time.
Okay.
But even before the change of leadership that came at the convention of the party on April the 2nd, the party itself had commenced the work of rebuilding the party and to change its fortune, surely as it relates to the population. I must tell you that while the defeat was quite resounding, as you've pointed out, at first blush, when you look at the numbers, it is not as bad as it sounds. It must not be forgotten that the opposition party, even though we did not win a seat, we got 41% of the popular votes. So 41% of those who voted in that election said, no, we do not support the new national party. And according to the information we have, as many as 10,000 persons combined may have either not registered to vote at all or were registered to vote but did not participate in the elections. So that there remains out there a large constituency of persons who do not look upon the new national party favorably. But more than that, I think that the program of the course of conduct that has been adopted by the new National Party administration upon coming into office has thrown into very serious doubt the belief that people voted on, the conviction that people voted on, that this party was going to somehow turn around the economic fortunes of the country. Essentially, the message that was carried through and through the election campaign by Dr. Mitchell and the new National Party leadership was that money was not a problem, that the problem that was facing Grenada was a problem of management, that I could not manage the economy, and that if given the opportunity in an election, they will demonstrate how things will have to be done. They promised that they would create jobs. The slogan that they carried was jobs, 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 and more jobs. They promised that they would attract investors and stimulate economic activity. The slogan was, we have the investors lined up, just waiting to come. They promised that they had a new plan for the development of the country once it took office. The slogan was, NNP to the rescue. And they promised that they were going to deliver. The slogan was, we will deliver. So these were the four promises in exchange for which the public gave their vote to the new National Party. And this is the foundation of its mandate, you see. But having come into office, within a matter of 3 weeks, the government took a totally different course than that which was expected by the population. The first thing they did was that on the 8th of March, within 3 weeks, they announced that they were not—they were basically going to stop paying all of the debts of the country. Monies were to be paid to the bondholders, international bondholders, $17 million by the 15th of March. That was not done. In fact, the announcement was made a week before. And the creditors then formed themselves, the international bondholders then formed themselves into an association, a committee, saying that they will not do business with the Mitchell administration until and unless the IMF basically got into the picture and took control. So it was on this basis that the government then was forced to embark upon a program with the IMF. They are calling it a homegrown structural adjustment program, but essentially this program was not grown at home, it was grown outside. Because these were the dictates that they had to comply with, the structural benchmarks, the performance criteria, all of the conditions of austerity that they were required to embark upon, measures that, of course, the IMF had to approve. As it turned out, these measures were beyond the expectations of the people and beyond the tolerance of the people, beyond the capacity of the people to bear, so that we've had 24 different taxes, levies, duties, charges imposed on the population in the space of 5 months or so, and when it was imposed. And, these have taken a very, very serious toll on the population. Personal income taxes have gone up. For those persons who were not required to pay between $3,000 and $5,000, they are now asked to pay 15% of their income in taxes.
Wow.
Property taxes for all homeowners and landowners were doubled. Taxes on agricultural lands were imposed for the first time in Grenada's history. The VAT on construction material was increased from 5% back up to 15%. Driver's licenses were tripled. Vehicle inspection fees were doubled. Ownership of transfer vehicles were multiplied by 10. An embarkation tax, a 2,000% increase. Customs service charge went up from 5% to 6%, but an aggregate increase, an accumulative increase of 20% in that tax alone. Education qualification certificate charges went up from $5 to $50. So all of these items, there's several cases. A 5% excise tax was imposed on all car batteries, on all motor oils, on all tires of vehicles, on all vehicular parts, as a result of which transportation costs are likely to go up because this is going to affect all the private bus drivers as well.
Mr. Burke, how sustainable is this?
Well, I don't think it is sustainable, because what has happened in effect is that this is going to have a terrible impact, first in terms of reducing people's disposable income. We are still trying to quantify that, but reducing people's disposable income on the one hand, increasing the price of goods on the other, because once you increase these excise charges and so on, and custom service charges, the local importers are not going to absorb that tax. They will pass it on to the consumer. So prices will go up. Duties have been imposed on all of the statutory corporations, 50% duties, including the electricity company. Yes, so all of these companies will now raise their charges. And so prices will go up, disposable income will go down, and at the same time, many of the social safety net programs that had been in place by the last government are now being reversed. I can speak particularly, for example, of the free school books program, which has now been compromised so that persons going to private school, including ordinary poor families, even if they're going to a school for which they pay for their children, will now have to buy books. A free barrels, duty-free barrels program that was in place for 3 or 4 months of the year, especially among Christmas time when persons will be receiving barrels from their families in the United States, they will now have to pay. That has been removed. I should tell you also that for returning residents to Grenada, who historically have had 100% duty exemption on a vehicle. Once you're coming back home and you bring a vehicle with you, you don't pay any duties. They've imposed a 50% duty on that as well. So that the situation is really not sustainable. Unemployment in the country, by the Prime Minister's own figures, stand at 33% among adults and 52.6% among young people.
Goodness now, gracious me.
Yeah, and these numbers, that in respect of the youth especially, are numbers which were issued by him in January during the budget debate. Since that time, at least 350 students have graduated from St. George's University, Grenadian students. Another 3,000 persons have graduated from the T.A. Marischer Community College, which is the local tertiary institution, as well as from the high schools combined. Persons who are finishing their high school and associate degree programs are combined,
no
about
jobs.
3,000 persons. So even if I assume that 1,000 of those will go back to school, you still have 2,000 persons joining the workforce. And that will, of course, raise the numbers beyond the 52.6% of which the Prime Minister is speaking. So the situation is extremely difficult. And what it has led to is increasing annoyance. The emotions have moved from initial disappointment by the electorate to anger, to frustration, and now to despair. The situation, the last thing we heard was that the government has, even the people who are doing the rotational work or fortnightly work on the roads, cleaning the roads and that sort of thing, that program, which is normally run in spurts of 5 to 6 times a year, they've only been done once since December of last year. And we are now being told that many of the workers are being required, in order to get a job, to get that rotation, are being required to purchase tickets for barbecues organized by the New National Party. So, in other words, it has become people will effectively have to pay a tithe in order to be given a 2-week job in the roads. So, this kind of situation is what we are up against, and the government has responded to the anger and frustration of the people by seeking to pursue a number of measures which, frankly spoken,
are, you know, are aimed at repressing individual rights and freedoms. We've seen, for example, the attempt by the government to enact an electronic crimes law that would criminalize the transmission of electronic information considered offensive by any person, even where that information is true, contrary to the Constitution of Grenada. We've seen an amendment to the Terrorism Act, giving the Attorney General the authority to declare any Grenadian person a terrorist or any Grenadian organization a terrorist. So it means that if you're not liked or you challenge what is going on, a declaration, rather than relying on the normal lists that are produced by the UN Security Council of those persons who are considered terrorists and organizations considered terrorists, Grenada is making up its own list, and that the Attorney General, who is a public servant, not an elected minister, a public servant answerable to the cabinet, this person, of course, will simply do what the cabinet asks him to do, so that you have the situation there. You have a situation in which the government sought to amend the interception of wire communication bill in an attempt to secure the legal authority to bug the telephones of any person believed to be acting contrary to the economic interests of the state, without defining what contrary to the economic interests of the state would involve. So that the question then arises, if I were to oppose the structural adjustment program, am I acting contrary to the economic interests of the state? And does that give the government the right then to bug my telephone? You see? All of these, the attempts by the government to the failure or refusal for a long period of time to appoint a new supervisor of elections at the elections office, the firing of the supervisor of elections because she challenged what she was being asked to do, the government deciding that it was going to the government was going to put internet services in all of the electoral offices around the country, and these offices, the server that will control these internet services will be based in the prime minister's office. And when the supervisor of elections challenged that, she was dismissed from the job summarily, told on the 30th of September, you no longer have a job effective October the 1st. I'm saying to you that these economic hardships that people are responding to with some despair and with some frustration is being met with a suppression of individual rights and individual freedoms. This is the situation that we are facing in the country. When I say these things to you, I am not making any of it up, because there is no merit or value in me trying to make these things up, because they're easily verifiable. All you need to do is look on the internet or speak to any person in Grenada, and they will tell you that the situation is deplorable. The government is not responding to the local population. In fact, the only thing that seems to bring any kind of movement is the external pressure.
Well, it sounds Mr. Burke, it sounds like imperialism to me there in Grenada.
Well, this is the problem, you see. The government now has embarked upon a plan to amend the Constitution, and this is also a source of some discussion at the moment. The recommendations that have been put forward, in many respects, we consider them to be wanting. I will not speak much on that today because, as it is, the party has not yet made public its position on this issue. And so I would not want, party members and other Grenadians to be hearing it for the first time on a radio station
in New York. But we will have to bring you back on the broadcast, Mr. Burke, because I'm sure there's a lot more that you'd like to share with our listeners. We've been speaking with Nazim Burke. He is the current opposition leader of the National Democratic Party in Grenada. Mr. Burke, thank you very much, and all the best to you and Grenadians. And I know that Emancipation Day is being observed throughout the Caribbean, and we're going to bring you a special right after these very important words. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
Bye-bye.
It's now time to order your signed copy of Omali Ishatela's new book, The Uneasy Equilibrium, The African Revolution versus Parasitic Capitalism. Chairman Omali's groundbreaking political analysis shows the way forward for people looking for answers during this period of crisis for imperialism, a crisis that offers great opportunity for colonized peoples everywhere. This latest book by the founder and leader of the African Socialist International and the Uhuru Movement costs $29.99 and will come off the press this spring. Order now at burningspearmarketplace.com or by calling 727-824-5700 and your copy will be personally signed by the author. Call 727-824-5700 or visit burningspearmarketplace.com today to pre-order your commemorative signed copy of The Uneasy Equilibrium, The African Revolution versus Parasitic Capitalism. Uhuru means freedom. Here's edutainment on the water you should not miss. It's the fourth annual Marcus Garvey Legacy Cruise for 6 days from December 14th through 20th, 2014, aboard the Carnival Breeze leaving out of Miami, Florida, and stopping in Grand Turk, Ocho Rios, Jamaica, and Nassau, Bahamas. Edutainment on board will feature Omali Yeshitela, chairman of the African Socialist International, and renowned actor Ron Bob Semple with The Spirit of Garvey. For more details and to place your booking for the fourth annual Marcus Garvey Legacy Cruise, call Freedom Horizons Travel Agency at 866-708-4009. The exclusive travel agency for the fourth annual Marcus Garvey Legacy Cruise. Log on to uhurulegacycruise.org for itinerary and pricing information. Call Freedom Horizons today at 866-708-4009, 866-708-4009, or visit uhurulegacycruise.org, because if you miss it, you'll regret it.
The Black is Back Coalition for Social Justice, Peace, and Reparations is having its international conference in Philadelphia on August 16th and 17th, and you are invited. It's all happening at Uhuru Furniture and Collectibles at 832 North Broad Street. Theme of the conference is Resist U.S. Wars and Occupations in the U.S. and Abroad. Reparations Now. Learn from Chairman Omali Yeshitela of the African Socialist International. See Ron Bob Semple as Marcus Garvey. Hear Glenn Ford speak on Ukraine and the Crisis of Empire. Listen to Lisa Davis expose the health attack on our community. The conference is free and open to the public. For more information, call 727-821-6621. Again, 727-821-6621 or visit blackisbackcoalition.org. Don't forget, August 16th and 17th in Philadelphia. Black is back.
Tune in to Caribbean Forum, Saturday mornings 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time with Ron Bob Semple on the Uhuru Radio Network.
The abolition of slavery in the Caribbean was the result of a number of factors in and outside of the area. Besides economic prosperity for the individual slaveholder and his country, the brutality of slavery gave rise to many revolts. The European colonial powers had to continually provide more military assistance to the plantation workers, which meant a considerable financial drain. Additionally, there were plantation owners who wished to have more freedom in how they conducted their business, and some wanted total independence from the colonial powers. When Britain decided to emancipate the slaves, they did so in a roundabout manner. They wanted to assure the planters of labor after emancipation, so they created an apprenticeship system where slaves older than 6 years of age were entitled to be registered as apprentice laborers and to acquire thereby all rights and privileges of freedom. In return for food, clothing, and lodging, but without wages, they were to work for their former owners 3/4 of the day. This apprenticeship was a quasi-slavery system designed to keep the slaves on the plantation but give them their freedom. Over 7,000 East Indians immigrated to the West Indies before 1841. In 1850, Chinese immigration occurred mainly in Guyana, but some went to both Jamaica and Trinidad. Indentured labor did not resolve the problems of the plantations and the local governments in the Caribbean during the 19th century, but it enabled the sugar plantations to weather the difficulties of the transition from slave labor. On August 1, 1834, an unarmed group of mainly elderly Negroes, being addressed by the governor at Government House in Port of Spain, Trinidad, about the new laws, began chanting, "Pas de 6 ans, pas de 6 ans." Not 6 years, no 6 years, drowning out the voice of the governor. Peaceful protests continued until a resolution to abolish apprenticeship was passed and de facto freedom was achieved. Full emancipation for all was legally granted ahead of schedule on the 1st of August 1838, making Trinidad the first British colony with slaves to completely abolish slavery.
I'm a slave.